We've been asking you all day long to tell us when should we open, what should we open. Tribune is getting more and more conservative about this editorially. They said in less than 2 weeks, well, in 18 days, they think that the restaurants should be allowed to open to minimal capacity. But they're getting fussy too. There's this Dr. Aaron Bromage, who is a comparative immunologist and a professor of biology at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. So this is the Dartmouth guy whose post has gone literally viral. It's not a video. It's a deep read. And while he does work in this field, what he's really done here for you and me is collate the findings of other people. And he said, okay, here's how it spreads. Here's who gets it. You know who gets it? People in their homes. Think about that. This sort of blew Steve Bertrand's mind when we stumbled upon this fact last week. The people getting the virus are the people at home.
Well, that's what Governor Cuomo said at one point.
Well, but that's this guy. He's on the phone line. Let's ask him.
Well, right. Good, because let me just say there was also a study then, I think, out of the Castro District in San Francisco, which seemed to say it was more essential workers. So I saw both.
Well, his point... I think we have to stop talking about him and actually talk to him. Doctor, are you there? This is John with my friend Steve Bertrand, and you're on the air, Doctor. Welcome to WGN in Chicago.
Thank you, John. How are you today?
Good. You're from Australia and work and live in both places. Is that right?
I pretty much reside full-time in the United States now and get back to Australia whenever I possibly can to visit family and friends back there.
How is it that people are getting the virus at home? I mean, what are you talking about there?
Yeah, so, you know, this virus can't walk, it can't move, it relies on us. So what happens is, you know, is exactly what I think Steve was saying, is you catch it out in the workplace as an essential worker or somewhere else, and then you bring it into your home. And because of the close contact you have with the people in your house, it spreads very, very easily once it's in your home. So you've got to try to keep it out.
You talked about super, so if one person gets it and they live with two other people, now we have three people with it, two of whom are doing everything that they're supposed to be doing. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's just that the proximity and time, the longer you're around somebody that's infected, the greater chance you have of catching the virus yourself.
You have a formula. It's a simple multiplication equation for what your chances are of getting it. And you also speak at some length about the biggest super spreading events are. Events, places and things that happen that you want to avoid. What are those after this? Dr. Aaron Bromage is on a phone line. He's an immunologist and professor at Dartmouth. So popular was the piece that he produced that sort of just documented some of the research that we know about COVID-19. How many email did you get over the past few days, Doc? What's your inbox like?
It's essentially crashing. I've got about 3,500 personal emails in the last 3 days, and a huge number of really good questions and supportive comments online on the blog that I have, and trying my hardest to get to them, but it's a little humbling and a little overwhelming right now.
We appreciate your time. I know the world literally is tapping you on the shoulder. And here you are at WGN Radio in Chicago. What's the equation to sort of determine your chances of getting COVID-19?
Well, it's really, you know, it's quite simple. It's exposure to the virus and time. You need to be exposed to enough of the virus in order to get infected. You know, some people tend to think, like, I just need to see one single virus particle and it will infect me. And that's more than likely not the case. You need to accumulate enough of the virus to establish an infection. And we don't know what that number is yet, but we do know that people are releasing it at low levels, and you need to inhale it at those levels, and it needs to build and build and build in order to establish an infection. So it's being exposed to the virus and time that is important in whether infection will actually establish.
Okay, so if I may, Steve, then the fact that you just breathed on me and you have it and we're passing on a sidewalk, and maybe I inhaled one of the viral particles, doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to get COVID-19. Is that correct?
That's correct. So just if we pick a simple number, such as 1,000 viral particles are needed to get infected. So I'm just pulling that out of the air. If someone breathes on you and you get 20, it's not going to establish an infection. But if you sat there and talked to somebody for 5 or 10 minutes and they're releasing 20 all the time and you're breathing that in, you slowly build up and get to that number of 1,000, and that's where infection can start.
Exposure times time, yeah.
Yeah, exposure times time.
So then I have two questions. The first is the idea of, and I'm happy to do it if they ask me to do it, but the idea of wearing a mask because I'm going to cross paths with someone on a bridge over the Chicago River really isn't going to protect me much or put me I'm not at much risk if I walk past that person, correct?
Right. I mean, the main part of my post was just saying that getting really angry at a person that is running 6 feet past you or riding 6 feet past you is not where you should be wasting mental energy and time in regards to exposure risk. Yes, they're huffing and puffing, but you're through their, exhaust plume in a very short period of time. And again, it's exposure and time. Whereas standing face-to-face or in a studio when you're there with a colleague and spending a lot of time face-to-face with them gives you that exposure and that time that's needed to get to that number that leads to an infectious dose.
So can I pick up bits of that number through the day, say in a conversation with John and then touching a door handle and then coming across someone on the sidewalk and then it accumulates and puts me at risk? Is that a way?
Potentially, again, we don't have this number yet. We don't have that data, and I really do hope it comes soon. But when we take other examples from other pathogens, simple one is with influenza, we know that two low-level exposures a day apart can lead to sickness. It can lead to you developing an infection. So, yes, they can accumulate, but when you do get exposed, your body is fighting against it to drop that number down. So that first exposure wouldn't be at, let's say it was 500. It wouldn't be at 500 the next day. It would be coming down as your innate immune system clears it out. So there is a finite time. We don't know what that time is, but I would suggest that accumulations during a day would, certainly be cumulative.
You spoke about super spreading events. You said at a meatpacking plant, that's a super spreading location and an event if you're working there. Weddings, funerals, birthdays, 10% of the early spreading events were weddings, funerals, and birthdays, and business networking, face-to-face business networking, like a conference in Boston in March where a lot of people were in a confined space for a period of time. Those are super spreading events, correct?
Right. So with those events, it's easier to work out where the exposure took place, so they get studied very, very well. There's obviously chance events from a handshake where you've been picked it up and then rub your eye and somebody gets sick and they bring it home. But when we study and look at these events where more than one person gets it, so doing really good bootleather epidemiology on the ground and studying this, we see that these big events, occur in environments where there's a lot of people in enclosed space with not necessarily the greatest air exchange, and that just leads to the really worrying trend that we have in the U.S. in the meat packing plants. We're seeing the same in Australia. They just had an outbreak in a meat processing facility. Some of the, earlier traced events, say a call center in South Korea, you end up with, 60%, quite a large number of the entire workforce all infected from that one person brought in, or the chain of infections that happen from one person bringing it in and then them spreading it to the other. So, these environments, these workplaces with lots of people are just, we really need to think about them and how we engineer them and get them working to make sure
that's people are... Go ahead and finish that thought, Doctor.
So we need to really assess and think about how we're putting our employees into this environment just to keep them safe.
I'm going to ask you to answer the question, and then I'll let you go. Of, all right, so what advice do you have for us when we go back to the workplace? But about these super spreading events, a choir at a church, a busy office setting. You wrote about a church choir where the people knew in Washington State that they knew about COVID-19. They knew if you're all in a room, you might get it. The choir sang for 2.5 hours inside an enclosed church roughly the size of a volleyball court. Still, afterwards, people were hugging and kissing. They were not social distancing. And over a period of 4 days, 45 of the 60 choir members developed the symptoms and 2 died. The youngest infected was 31. I'm just like, people, what are you thinking?
Yeah. So, well, actually, with that one, it's the other way around. They were at this church, they were aware, and they didn't do the normal hugging and kissing, and they tried to social distance as much as they can. Yeah, they really put in what, you know, the best practices we knew at that time in place to really lower their risk. But what wasn't known at the time was how much singing and yelling, for that matter, can actually put virus into the air. And it was just a terrible outcome that, of this choir of 60 people, 45 of them became ill from a single choir session. I think these people did everything right in the first place. We just didn't know enough, but now we do, so we need to be aware of those risks.
Erin Bromage, E-R-I-N, Erin with an E, Erin Bromage, B-R-O-M-A-G-E, it looks like Bromage, erinbromage.com. is the place to go to read about his summary of the finding as we know them. Some of these case studies are fascinating. And you've been a great resource for a lot of people, Doctor. I may call you again, but I have to let you go now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, John. It was great being on your show.